Now, first today, to the dangers of getting what you've wished for on a scale, shall we say, far beyond your expectations. Or maybe it's a tale of unintended consequences. Either way, the mainstream Republican Party in the US has a small nightmare on its hands. Because with its flag showing a hissing rattlesnake and its motto of "Don't tread on me," the Tea Party was never going to be the shrinking violet of the US political scene. This week it's been even more centre stage when its candidate won the Republican Party pre-selection ballot in the tiny state of Delaware. Christine O'Donnell, a serial contestant, had been written off by the Republican establishment, but she won convincingly, and she'll take her place as the official candidate in the upcoming congressional elections alongside five other Tea Party candidates, prompting the somewhat delicious sight, I thought, of arch-Republican hard man Karl Rove barely disguising his panic. So what does this mean for the Republican establishment, and even more, for the American body politic? Well, Professor Tom Mann is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and he's joined us here on Saturday Extra from time to time to discuss the American mood and its politics, so I'm delighted to welcome him back. Good morning, Tom Mann.
Good morning, Geraldine. Happy to be with you again.
Tom, this is allegedly good news for the Democrats from what we read here, but these very, very conservative Tea Party candidates surely aren't a sign that the mood of the country is turning away, that is turning towards liberal politics, is it?
Oh, there's no question that the country as a whole is deeply discouraged by the economic conditions in the country, and very pessimistic that things are going to get better anytime soon. They've seen unprecedented in contemporary times steps taken by the government to try to ward off a depression, and it frightens them. And this is true across the board, not just among Tea Partiers. What the Tea Partiers are is a group that, frankly, it's so many things. There are hundreds and hundreds of small tea parties. There are maybe a half dozen national kind of organizations. For the most part, it's just a very radically decentralized network of people who are mainly white, conservative, not
men.
Poor by any means, mostly Republican, who think that the government in Washington has gotten way too big, that representatives have gotten too far apart from our constitutional design, and it's time to put a stop to it.
Am I right in savouring the irony of people like Karl Rove, who it seems to me allowed this phenomenon to run, but you can tell me if I'm wrong, because they thought it served the Republican purpose, and now it's threatening to engulf them as well, because he has described Christine O'Donnell as unelectable.
Yes, and then he walked it back after this strong reaction across the country in conservative circles against him for speaking ill of one of their nominees. So everyone is getting on board, Geraldine. One of the things that's important to understand is that in recent years, the Republican Party has become much, much more conservative than Ronald Reagan ever was. Its activists have been pulling the party to the left, organized groups have been doing the same thing. Republicans in Congress have been basically blocking all initiatives to deal with the economic problems by the Democrats in a unified fashion. So, frankly, it's not a surprise to see the Tea Party materialize and get strength and support among Republican rank and filers. The difficulty comes when candidates emerge that are patently extreme ideologically and seemingly unqualified for office. That's what's happening now, and so in the short term, it probably hurts the Republicans' prospects for taking a majority in the Senate. That's where their vulnerability
is. In the Senate, as opposed to the House.
Right, but I think, frankly, the energy of the Tea Party will help the Republicans in their quest to take over the House of Representatives. The real problem for the Republicans is in the longer term, because they hold extreme positions. Most Americans do not embrace their positions, especially when economic times get a little bit better. There won't be any interest in the kind of things that they are proposing. And to the extent all of the Republican presidential candidates veer right to please the Tea Partiers, they make themselves much more unelectable in a general presidential election.
How crucial do you believe the support of Sarah Palin has been for the Tea Party candidates who've got up?
Certainly her endorsement of Christine O'Donnell made a difference. I think she helped with Sharron Angle in Nevada as well, who won the nomination over the Republican Party candidate to face off against Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. There have been four or five candidates that she really gave a boost to, but one of the things you should understand is many of the Tea Party activists, they're deeply resentful of her trying to, in effect, take over this movement. They think of themselves as leaderless, as bottom-up, organized citizens trying to get active in civic life and take their government back. Some of them like Palin's sort of matter-of-fact straightforwardness and seemingly sticking to conservative principles, but they're resentful of her or anyone else who tries to speak in their name.
That's very interesting. One of the real challenges, I think, watching from Australia is this classic pendulum swing tendency in US politics, which seems almost to be adopted as a kind of cleanser of the system where, you know, us with our British inheritance are far more inclined to move around the centre and get quite anxious, very anxious about these sorts of extreme movements. And I noticed that Peggy Noonan, writing in the Wall Street Journal, wrote something very perceptive. "I wonder if Tea Party members," she wrote, "know how fragile are the institutions that help keep the country together." Do you think that is a fair comment?
Yes, and you know, this has been present in American politics since the founding period, when James Madison and his colleagues were writing and selling the U.S. Constitution. There arose a group named the Anti-Federalists, who were deeply suspicious of all of this power, this small R Republican form of government being centralized in Washington. And throughout American history, they have come forward. In fact, within 20 or 30 years of the founding, Madison and his colleagues were deeply distressed by the populist impulses of a citizenry that was ignorant about public affairs but determined to play a role in it. So this has come forward. This kind of reaction, by the way, was present when Franklin Roosevelt was coping through the New Deal with the Great Depression in the 1930s. So we've seen it before.
Therefore not worry you? You can all put it in a context and say, oh, that'll be overcome and don't worry?
I do believe that since there is no leader and there is a strong objection to having a leader, there is no explicit policy agenda, there's no explicit political program. It's more cultural and social than it is political. I think it'll be worth watching in that respect, but I don't see it developing into a political movement. In the short term, what's going to happen is it's going to pull a Republican Party, which as I said, in recent years has moved substantially to the right, even further to the right. And the argument of ideological overreach by Obama is almost entirely a function of the extraordinary economic problems we faced and the necessity of governmental action. But he's a center-left president like Bill Clinton was. The Democrats have put themselves closer to the political center. It is the Republicans and the Tea Partiers who are now sort of threatening to carry us to the right. My guess is we'll have a standoff in Washington with little change, little attention to our problems, but certainly no great ideological upheaval to the right.
And just final question. In the past, you didn't have the presence of all the proliferation of media, though, that you've got now, things like Fox News, which really are quite propagandist, such that, you know, you've got the whole groups of Americans who don't even think Obama was born there. Aren't there some extra dangers at the moment?
There are indeed. It's quite disconcerting to see the number of untruths that many citizens believe are absolutely facts. And this is reinforced by ideologically oriented media outlets. It's also a function of the internet, where rumors pass with lightning speed, and people are able to stay in touch with one another, reinforce one another, and be especially prone to these kind of charges. So, yeah, I think all of our democracies are going to be strained by digital communications, partisan media, and we're all going to have to find our way of coping with that.
Joseph Goebbels would have been proud of some of the stuff, I think, that's around at the moment, dare I say. Okay, Tom, you better get out there and work hard. Thanks very much for joining us.
Happy to be with you.
Professor Thomas Mann from the Brookings Institution, where he's a senior fellow in governance studies. And can I refer you to Counterpoints? Last Monday's Counterpoint was terrific on exactly this, the dumbing down of the American right. It's all on the website right now, and it's really helpful in understanding, well, a perception of what is happening right now in the US. Well, coming up next, the DJ's case in Australia, our own form of paradigm shift.